This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now your host, Rick Moore.
Listen to me. Tuesday is election day, and we need to be prepared. Yes, politics today has become so much about fear, disgust, misunderstanding, and closed-mindedness. The goal of most politicians, even the ones you want to win, is to downplay each other, confuse you, cheer for you to be lazy and repetitive in your beliefs. I'm asking that you don't make your decision based on a 15-second radio ad claiming to explain why you should vote one way. Listen to me. I know that my beliefs and desires occasionally undermine my attempt to be impartial, but then I don't expect anyone to really be impartial. Not about the topics we often discuss. How can you go through the day shrugging your shoulders, not caring whether our lives are better served by holding energy companies responsible for their increasing amounts of pollution or by their increased economic profits? Why would you pretend to be impartial about the Marshall Newman Amendment proposal when the voting outcome affects each and every person, regardless of your age, gender, sexual, or marital status? Listen to me. Our country, our state, and even our neighborhoods are made up of different people. For some, taxes and the economy will direct their vote. For others, the Iraq War is the central issue. For too few, a candidate's true character and values play a part on election day. For too many, voting feels unimportant. I'm telling you, it's not. Listen to me. I understand the reasons some might vote for more closely defining what makes a marriage in Virginia. Those reasons I mentioned earlier. Fear, disgust, closed-mindedness, and misunderstanding. Well, there is really just one reason to consider voting against the amendment. Compassion. Someone who loves you taught you that giving and accepting compassion makes you a better person. Listen to them. Welcome, boys and girls. It's the first Sunday in November, the last Sunday before you get out to vote. That's right. Tuesday is voting day. Make sure you do the important thing, the right thing, regardless of which way you vote. At least get out and let us believe that the decisions come from everyone and not just from 15% of the people who can help make the decisions. Interesting topic here today. Let's fire up all the buttons. Three folks in the studio who've taken their time out of a nice Sunday to come in. We're going to be talking about the Charlottesville Center for Peace and Justice. As we talk about how that works and building bridges to the axis of evil countries, Iran, Iraq, and North Korea. Let's try this one first. Professor Ramazani, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Thank you so much. Professor Ramazani has been on the program several times in the past, but always by home from the phone. How much more comfortable is it at home rather than being here in the studio, Professor?
Oh, it's better to be here.
Oh, well, good. I think It's better to be here, too.
Yes.
I'm always nervous when we have guests on by phone. I never quite trust the technology that I can't see.
I feel better to be doing this live.
We also have Nesta Ramazani. And how are you today?
I'm very well, thank you.
I appreciate you coming in as well. You have we've had a professor on several times in the past, and he is Professor Emeritus from university, government, and foreign affairs. Many people have read articles in the newspaper or seen him on a variety of shows, CNN and at the very least. Nessa, you seem to keep a background, at least from what I see. What are your specialties?
Well, there's several specialties, so maybe I'm jack of all trades and master of none. But I have published a book on Persian, meaning Iranian, cuisine called Persian Cooking. So I know a good bit about the food of Iran. I have also published a large number of articles on women and Islam. And I have dealt with the country of Iran in this respect as well. And I have also published a book called The Dance of the Rose and the Nightingale, which came out in 2002, which is an autobiography, but which deals largely with the early modernization of Iran and the conflicts and tensions that can arise when a country's traditions are confronted by the requirements of modernization and how these clashes can be resolved.
Now, are you Iranian as well?
I'm half Iranian and half English, and therefore the conflict between tradition and modernization was very much alive in my own home. And so I deal with that in my autobiography, but I put it against the backdrop of the social, political changes occurring in Iran at the time.
Can I ask quickly, not to create any family disharmony, but who's had the highest best-selling book?
Well, the Persian cook, my Persian cookbook has sold better than my autobiography, and it's been in print for many, many years and gone through three publishers, and it's still in print. My husband obviously has published many, many more books than I have, but his books are scholarly books, and some of them were written many years ago and are still in print. But, you know, scholars don't write with the idea of making money or of it's a scholarly enterprise.
At least
so
not
it's
the,
not
the
even a fair comparison.
The good scholars don't write with that intent. also in the studio today, Sarah, and I'm going to try and get this correct, Sarah Landsman.
That's right.
All right. Sarah's here, not solely to represent the Charlottesville Center for Peace and Justice, because she's also here for some political aspects as well. And I believe that the professor and Nesta are both here also in terms of helping to represent the Center for Peace and Justice. But,
that's right.
Sarah, you're on the board of directors, correct?
I'm on the board, yes, of the Charlottesville Center for Peace and Justice.
Tell me exactly, you know, it sounds like the name of the organization tells us everything we need to know. Charlottesville Center for Peace and Justice. But what is the mission of the group? What does the group do other than have, you know, monthly meetings where everyone says, you know, we need less violence in the world today?
Right. Well, actually, the Charlottesville Center for Peace and Justice is a very active group. We do pursue an agenda of nonviolence and justice and peacemaking on local, national, and international levels. We've been in Charlottesville for more than 22 years, and we try to give citizens a voice and opportunities to speak out and act for peace and justice. We have email alerts that go out twice a week. We print a newsletter that goes out four times a year. We have a website, www.charlottesvillepeace.org, which provides vital information about local events, and it also provides links to other online peace and justice resources, ways to contact government officials, and articles of interest. This past year, we had speakers, lectures, presentations. We sponsored a march against the war in Iraq for the third anniversary. We also had a public forum on the war in Iraq. We had a panel of distinguished speakers. We showed a film entitled Occupation Dreamland. We co-hosted Amy Goodman together with Amnesty International, who spoke. She's the executive producer of Democracy Now!, a national public affairs radio program.
Let me ask a quick question. With the current state of affairs in the United States and in the world, do you feel successful?
It's hard to say. Right now, obviously, with our current administration, things are worse than I personally, as a person, as Sarah, ever dreamed it would be when I was younger. But you never know what is going to happen in a week, what is now germinating within the public and still will express itself. Yes, I am hopeful.
Okay. It is 11:12 here on the Wake Up Call, Sunday, November 5th. We're talking with folks from the Charlottesville Center for Peace and Justice, Sarah Landsman, Nesta Ramazani, Professor R.K. Ramazani, Professor Emeritus from the UVA Government and Foreign Affairs. Let me take a moment and thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for their support today. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports has footwear for the season from Merrow, UGG, and Vasque Plus clothing, including head and headwear and socks from Patagonia, Mountain Hardware, and the North Face. You'll find Blue Ridge Mountain Sports in the Barracks Road Shopping Center here in Charlottesville, at Wintergreen in Richmond, and at BRMS.com. And although I didn't buy them from BRMS, I got some Merrow shoes, and they rock. So, if you're looking... Excuse me, boys and girls. All right, let's jump into things sort of head on, because there's an upcoming event that you're going to have, I guess, on the week, and we'll save plenty of time to give the exact time and place, et cetera. But the goal, or I guess the theme of it, is building bridges to the axis of evil. Is that the correct title of the theme?
Building cultural bridges to the axis of evil, that's right.
So we're talking about being nice and polite and understanding and more open-minded and open-hearted to Iran, Iraq, and North Korea. And, you know, one of my simple questions is, why do we need this? What helps us in this way? Will it guarantee us getting something positive in return? Who wants to take that on? Professor?
Yeah, let me just make sure that I don't leave the wrong impression. I don't belong to the group called Peace and Justice. I admire and appreciate their mission, and I have talked to the group at their invitation, but I don't belong to any particular group. Now, in regard to building bridges, I think just about 10-15 years ago, there was a major writing by a University of Harvard professor called Clash of Civilizations, and that had a great impact before 9/11. But when the time came and the tragic events happened on 9/11, then a lot of people believed that indeed now this so-called war on terrorism is meaning that we are actually in seeing the development of that thesis of Clash of Civilization. And actually, that has been a wrong lesson learned from the current events, because more than ever before, now we need to understand other cultures, other civilizations, other religions. And they are fundamental to understanding politics. Politics are not separable from the foundations that are moral, that are spiritual, that are civilization and culture. Therefore, it is great help to America, to our understanding of other cultures. They need to know what other people's thinking are underlying their behavior. But we are unfortunately exposed to so much soundbite and so much impartiality. And I don't believe that this is impossible to be impartial. I think the key concept should be open-mindedness, Rick, that you mentioned. That is the key, because partiality comes around one way or another. But if we keep on an open mind to a variety of perspectives, I think there we are in search of some kind of truth that ultimately will point out to the oneness of humanity.
So am I understanding you correctly, Professor, when to build a good cultural bridge, do you do this regardless of the initial feedback that you get? If I'm being polite to you, and in the beginning I find that you are turning your back to me, that maybe in other ways that you are not accepting my open-mindedness and my friendliness, at what point does the country continue with that? You know, we're talking about Iran, Iraq, and North Korea, countries that we haven't been nice to for quite some time, and I would think that the countries themselves or the people who are leading those countries would be a little suspicious of us being open-minded and friendly towards them. So how long do we make this effort? Or do we just not worry about what the reply is and we're doing it for ourselves?
There's nothing wrong, Rick, about thinking about our national interests. That's fundamental. But what we are talking about is building bridges in terms of, you mentioned compassion, you mentioned the question of open-mindedness, in terms of not just being nice and sympathetic and empathize with other people for its own sake, but also because in our enlightened self-interest, to take note of those people's values and concerns, not just being only hubris and center on our own concerns and try to project our own model for the rest of the world. Now, the best example, in my view, is the threshold, the turning point in world public opinion before 9/11, after 9/11, and especially after 9/11 and after the invasion of Iraq. We had the world with us as Americans after the 9/11 tragedy. Everyone sympathized with us. Everybody believed that there should be war against some kind of terrorist groups, Al-Qaeda or otherwise. And then the invasion of Iraq actually completely overturned that. World public opinion today shows that America's prestige and image has never been this low in the estimate of world people, not governments, not regimes we support or we are against.
All right, 11:20 here on the Wake Up Call with Professor R.K. Ramazani, Nesta Ramazani, and Sarah Landsman. As we talk about building cultural bridges to Iran, Iraq, and North Korea, and the Charlottesville Center for Peace and Justice. Markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Partly sunny today, highs 50 to 55. Partly cloudy tonight, lows 25 to 30. Partly cloudy again tomorrow, highs 55 to 60. It's clear in the valley in 46 and in Charlottesville where it's 44, but it's cloudy in Lynchburg where it's 46 and in Richmond where it's 50.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And let's thank Five Guys Burgers and Fries for their support. Five Guys, rated for 4 years running. Five Guys serves America's standard, fresh and handmade from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m., and they're open until 10 Fridays and Saturdays. That's Five Guys Burgers behind the fountain in the Barracks Road Shopping Center. They're in the Hollymead Town Center and now in the Downtown Mall, all here in Charlottesville. On the web, it's fiveguys.com. That's fiveguys.com. And WNRN just held our fall fund drive, and we received $83,000 in pledges. But a few of you still need to pay, so stop by or mail your payment as soon as possible. You can also still pay with a credit card by calling the station during business hours. The second round of written notices to those with unpaid pledges is going out next week, so watch your mail. And this further reminder, about half of the premium packages are still here at the station for those of you who have paid but not made arrangements to pick up your goodies. Again, call or come by to get your stuff. All right, back in action with the ladies and the professor. Vanessa, let me ask you. We're talking about the Middle East. It seems like one of the biggest issues going on in the Middle East has a lot to do with the book that you wrote that you mentioned earlier, which is Tradition versus Modernization. And I'm curious as to how the modernization of women has had an effect on some of the things that are going on now. Let's start with that sort of open-ended question, and I'll narrow it down a little bit as we go along.
Modernization has greatly impacted women and the attitudes of men towards women and the attitudes of governments towards women in the Middle East. It has also greatly affected American concepts of the lives of women in the Middle East, which and often this comes across in a very distorted stereotypes about oppressed Muslim women, and the whole question of the veil is highly charged and sensationalized. What one needs to bear in mind is that many of the freedoms that women enjoy in the Western world today were earned with great difficulty. For instance, the right to vote for women in America was opposed by the government, by President Woodrow Wilson, by...
It's not even 100 years old.
Yes, exactly. And so we should not instantly compare the freedoms that we have with, let's say, that perhaps what we see as the lack of freedoms in the Middle East. Many of the Middle Eastern countries are only recently becoming modernized, are developing socially, politically, and economically. And the confrontation between modernization and tradition has come about much, much more rapidly than it ever did in the Western world. The Western world had much more time to gradually evolve into modernization. In the Middle East, it's happened so rapidly that it has caused great dislocation and great turmoil. It's almost as though the Middle East has gone from the scribe in the street to straight to the computer with nothing in between. Or it's as though the Middle East has gone from riding donkeys and mules straight to riding in airplanes. It's that kind of rapid transition which has caused a lot of dislocation. Nevertheless, it has taken hold. Much of the Middle East has become greatly urbanized, and the question of the rights of women has evolved, and what one the American audience needs to bear in mind, that the development of modernization has taken different time elements and different routes in different countries of the Middle East. The Middle East is not uniform. Different countries develop at different rates. So let's say women's right to vote has taken place at different times in different countries. And then the political situation affects the rights of women. We all know in this country that the Shah, under his reign, supported modernization and rapid modernization, and that after the revolution there was a tremendous clampdown in Iran on women's rights, the rights that they had gained under the Shah. What we don't know is how many advances women have made under the revolutionary government in spite of repressive interpretations of Islamic law, Sharia. For instance, and I will just cite a few statistics from Iran today, is the women in Iran have one of the highest rates of education in the entire Middle East. 64% of women in Iran graduate from the university. That's a very high rate of graduation. It's even higher than that in the United States. There are a large number of women in highly professional fields, such as medicine. There are many, many women doctors in Iran. In Iran, they had a very successful family planning program, which was promoted by the current regime. And it was so successful that it was cited at the 94 convention in Cairo on development and family planning. We have had in Iran in the past a woman vice president. We have had a number of women in the parliament even now. And I think that by and large you can say that the educated middle-class Iranian woman is highly mobile in spite of being forced to wear a hijab, which is their version of the veil, and in spite of some repressive laws. They are highly educated, they're very, very functional in society, and are fighting constantly to gain more and more rights and freedoms.
At 11:28 here on the Wake Up Call, Nesta Ramazani, Professor R.K. Ramazani, and Sarah Landsman here in the studio as we talk about building cultural bridges to Iran, Iraq, and North Korea. I want to take a moment and thank Blue Ridge Graphics for their support of the day. Blue Ridge Graphics can be found at Mead Avenue at East High Street, serving Charlottesville with custom t-shirts, sportswear, and professional graphic design since 1979. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746. That number can be found in the Charlottesville Yellow Pages and at BlueRidgeGraphics.com. Don't forget, you can call us up if you'd like to ask a question or make a comment, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. I don't even know where to go next. I have so many questions staring at me, and I want to try and involve everyone. It's maybe a little off topic from where we just were, but Sarah, as someone representing the Charlottesville Center for Peace and Justice, does justice ever include violence?
No.
Never. Always, that's an easy answer for you.
Well, it's not that easy for me personally because I am a child of survivors of the death camps. My father was in Auschwitz, so obviously I'm thankful that the American troops came in and liberated those camps. So I can't say that it's an easy thing for me to say, but it is something that I do deeply believe, that we must try to resolve all conflicts through negotiation and agreements.
Professor Ramazani, you wrote a recent article, and you sent me a couple, so I don't think this is the one from today. You do have an article in today's Daily Progress, correct?
Yes, sir.
So everyone should rush out and actually buy the Daily Progress. I'm sure you can probably read it online and save yourself some money, because, Professor, you're not getting any commission on paper sold, I'm assuming.
No, Daily Progress has wanted me to do this, and I'm delighted. I have been in Charlottesville for 54 years, and they know me, and they have published me repeatedly before. And sometimes I have published elsewhere, like Philadelphia Inquirer last month, and they reproduce this in Daily Progress. Today, the topic of the article is understanding Iran's nuclear policy is critical to America. And I hope people will have a chance to read it. It won't be on the website yet. It will be probably put on the website tomorrow.
And again, I can't remember whether this is from the Philadelphia Inquirer article or the Daily Progress article, but as a good Charlottesvillian, you are writing about the Jefferson viewpoint.
Yes.
And what would Jefferson say about our current Middle East policy? What do you say about war being justified? When is it? When is it not?
Yes. Jefferson, in principle, was adamantly opposed to war of what he called, and I quote, scourge of mankind. And people who don't know much about Jefferson, they say, oh no, he also had Barbary pirates. That was the first American fight against terrorists. Well, that is nonsense, because Barbary pirates was a war that we had to wage, because 30 American ships were interned and about 309 Americans were detained on those ships and outside those ships by the Dey of Algiers. And so that was not a war of choice. It was a war, defensive war. And that is the big difference I draw between the war that Jefferson fought and the war that Mr. Bush fights or fought.
What about the possibility, some would say probability, of Iran and enriched plutonium and potential nuclear weapons? Does that fall anywhere near the same category as the Barbary pirates?
If we are committed, as Iran is committed, it has an obligation as an early signatory of the Non-Proliferation Treaty. Iran is a signatory, and it has to observe the obligation that use enrichment of uranium should be only up to the level of peaceful use, not making bombs, nuclear bombs. Now, Iran is in no position, according to our intelligence reports, maybe it will be between 5 and 10 years if Iran was indeed interested in making a bomb. And most people don't realize that in 2003, under President Khatami, the reformist president of Iran, there was a whole package offered to the United States in terms of the Bush administration. That package included discussion and negotiations on the uranium enrichment, discussion and negotiations on Arab-Israeli conflict, discussion and negotiations on Iran's support of Islamic Jihad or Hezbollah, and all these questions would be on the table and can be discussed. But it was unanimously known among scholars and even leading journalists that it was brushed aside and dismissed by the Bush administration. Therefore, the question is whether or not Iran wants to negotiate. And I firmly believe, as one who is considered as the founder of Iranian foreign policy studies in America, that Iran wants to negotiate, but not negotiation with preconditions. Negotiation that you give up your enrichment program, not bomb. Iran doesn't have bomb. Enrichment program, which they are entitled to, before we even talk. But what the talk would be about.
Are we going to invade Iran?
No.
You don't believe that we will?
No. And the reasons are obvious. It's not because we are good and they're bad. The reason is that we are overstretched. We are actually deep in trouble in Iraq with the chaos that is going on, insurgency, sectarian war, and so on. And we are also involved in the dismal situation of the resurgence of the Taliban in Afghanistan, which we think that Afghanistan is now a democracy. It is a ridiculous notion. The only secure part in Afghanistan is the relatively secure, is capital city Kabul. That is why we are now going to invade Iran, but certain groups in this country do want to invade anyway. Some of these groups are the same who told us that we should Iraq, and I happen to know a few of them.
11:37 here in the wake-up call. Feel free to call in, 979-0919, 971-4096. We have a call from someone who didn't want to go on the air, but you're welcome to call in, and we'll put you on if you'd like. Professor, what good does signing a nuclear non-proliferation treaty actually do? How binding is it?
It is supposed to be binding. That is why we have a mechanism set up for many years, and that is called International Atomic Energy Agency, to monitor. In fact, how many of us know today that inspectors are in Iran and watching Iranian nuclear enrichment program? I think very few realize that. And therefore, we have had reports from that agency, the extent to which Iran has developed nuclear enrichment, and the extent that they should go or can go under the treaty. Now, again, if we say, what is the use of International Atomic Energy Agency, what's the use of treaties, then we are throwing away all consideration for international law, and we have the law of the jungle. As we go unilaterally and invade wherever we want to because it doesn't fit our interests. That's one point. The other point is that non-proliferation is violated, is being violated in effect by not only those countries that have developed, that they are holders of nuclear weapons, such as ourselves in America, because we are also under non-proliferation treaty obligated to get to the point of denuclearization. That is worldwide denuclearization. Now, therefore, it appears hypocritical that we are concerned about other countries' development of nuclear enrichment, even when it is apparently for peaceful purposes. For example, just about a week or so ago, the United States representative at the United Nations Security Council was proposing a draft resolution for sanctions against Iran to the effect that in part would ban Iranian students from all universities in the world to study, can you imagine, to study nuclear physics. This will enrage Iranian millions of forward-looking reformist students in Iran, and the hardliners in Iran would be the first one to exploit that rage of Iranian students. So these questions are much more complicated than people realize, And the only reason for not realizing at times, frankly, is that we confine ourselves to the headlines and to the sound bites and to the partisan perspectives without really trying to see a variety of perspectives, a variety of points of views, and that is what Jefferson believed in. He talked about freedom of not just religion. Not religion. Not that you can be Christian, Muslim, Hindu, or whatever. No. Freedom of conscience. That is what Jefferson believed. You can be a polytheist. You can be an atheist. You can be agnostics. You can be anything you want. That was freedom of conscience. True to yourself and true to humanity. That's what Jefferson believed.
All right, 11:40 here on the wake-up call. That was Professor R.K. Ramazani, Professor Emeritus from the UVA Government and Foreign Affairs Department. We also have Nesta Ramazani here in the studio and Sarah Landsman. Sarah, when we come back from the break, you're up on deck with the next question. Be prepared.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, UVA's Larry Sabato is in great demand at election time. Experience a day in the life of America's favorite political prognosticator. How does one tree stop a multi-million dollar building project? The Hook reporter lets the Charlottesville Board of Zoning Appeals answer that. And read about the interesting film festival happenings you might not have been able to see for yourself. The Hook, offering all residents of Iran, Iraq, and North Korea a chance to subscribe. And we want to thank 45fix.com for their support. If you have a project but not the time, there is a simple way to find a contractor, from kitchen and bathroom remodeling, house painting to decks and siding. It's 45fix.com. Immediate no obligation estimates available anytime. That's the number 4, the number 5, and the word fix.com. And stay tuned, because at noon, it's George Bell for Les Temps Purdue. He's currently here invading my personal space. And if French isn't your thing, Les Temps Purdue is The Time's Gone By. And on WNRN, that means late 80s through mid-90s alternative. Tune in for it next. Les Temps Purdue, brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music, only here on WNRN. All right, let's fire up the microphones again. Sarah, a question for you is this phrase that you don't seem to care for very much, the axis of evil. Right. I'm curious as to what it is that gets you about that. And where you, what sort of mindset you believe it, you know, puts us in?
Yeah, thank you. Well, what I think is that using that term is a demonization of whole nations of people, and it's being done by our current administration. Their use of the term, the axis of evil, it dehumanizes, it vilifies people. Right now, these people are from Iran and Iraq and North Korea, but in the future, it could be China or Venezuela. This is just the first step to making it all right to persecute, torture, and eventually to kill these people.
Didn't we call in World War II, though? Didn't we call our right. enemies at the time? Didn't we use similar phrasing?
Right. It does. It has a long history. Also, the Nazis, they labeled the Jews the scum of the earth, der Abschaum der Erde, less than human. The apartheid government in South Africa called the African citizens kafirs, which means insects. All of these things, and also what you mentioned, Rick, it desensitizes people so that we repress our own moral standards against torture and killing. And that's why we oppose that term. That's why we're using it to point out that this administration does it, and to not let people become desensitized to that type of vilifying, dehumanizing language.
Is there another phrase or word choice? And I understand that the Charlottesville Center for Peace and Justice, the main theme for this upcoming event, which I will not fail to give out, allow for date, time, information, et cetera, is building cultural bridges.
Right.
But again, I go back to a question that I asked Professor Ramazani earlier, is, you know, currently they are indeed fighting us in some manner or another, whether they're doing it physically or politically, et cetera. So is there a proper word or phrase to use to identify those who are patting us on the back and those who have their hands up in front of us trying to stop us from doing whatever?
I don't really see it that way at all. I don't see that the people in these countries are in any way threatening us. I feel that our country is threatening them, and that...
Would you hold the same thing for... We haven't even touched North Korea.
Right.
Would the North Koreans fall into that same category? And I recognize that if you want to talk about the millions of people in each country, it's very easy to say, we're not doing anything to them. They're not hurting us. And I recognize that our administration needs to have a little more, you know, macro vision than they probably have in a lot of these instances. But in North Korea, their leader, the person who actually has control over what is happening right now, did he or did he not do something dangerous to us and to the world with the nuclear test? I'm trying not to take sides, because I don't like the bad semantic phrase either.
Right.
But what I am trying to do is find out, is there ever a time when you can say, not good?
Well, you can say that a certain leader is not good, but that doesn't mean you vilify a whole nation of people, of the mothers, the fathers, the children in those countries. You don't make those people less than human. You criticize just the actions of the certain leaders. That's a whole different story than what our current administration is doing.
Well put. Thank you. Professor, now that we jumped on to North Korea for a moment, we had the nuclear bomb test and sort of freaked everybody out. And now the leader is saying, okay, hold on, I'll actually have those talks that I wasn't going to have before. Does that say anything? Does that tell us anything?
Well, unfortunately, some of these things are our own doing. Because during the Clinton administration, we did have discussions with the North Koreans, and we had some agreement. We claim that they reneged on that. But the point that we have is, from a North Korean regime perspective, the nuclear test would push America to negotiation table, which is what the North Koreans have desperately wanted. One-on-one talk, not just six, not collectively, and they have needs, desperate economic needs, desperate poverty in North Korea, one of the probably most poverty-stricken people in the world, and they want economic betterment. And I think the credit now should not go so much to the test of a nuclear device, but the credit should go to China, in all fairness, because it was China that really brought the North Koreans to the position of saying we would then join negotiations directly with Americans.
All right, Kirk, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right, man. What you got?
Yeah, I would just like to make a comment that North Korea had a treaty with us that we would build them two cold water reactors, which they cannot get fissionable nuclear fuel from. And in exchange, and part of the contract was that we would also supply them with fuel oil so that they could make electric. And during the Bush administration, we basically did not complete the cold water reactors we were supposed to build. They had IAEA inspectors on the ground at North Korea's nuclear plants, and it wasn't until this administration cut off the fuel oil that we were supposed to supply them until we got the plants online that North Korea decided to eject the IAEA inspectors and go to making nuclear weapons. And I'm glad to hear the professor back on the show again. I think he has wonderful insights.
Thanks, Kirk.
Thank you.
11:51 here on the wake-up call. Call up if you got a question or a comment. Sarah Landsman from the Charlottesville Center for Peace and Justice, Nesta Ramazani, Professor R.K. Ramazani. Nesta, we talked a little bit about women in the Middle East, in Iran, etc. I'm curious, do you believe that their change, that their Western culture will lead to something different than what's there now? It seems like we talk a lot about the Western culture changing what's going on in Iran. But Iran, if I'm not mistaken, Iran has more of a theocratic leaders than they did 10 years ago, 20 years ago. So how does that happen? And will the women lead things back and lead them forward, I guess?
There was a setback after Ahmadinejad was elected. There had been many, many hopes placed before that on President Khatami because he was a reformist president and there was a reformist parliament. And there were, I believe, 13 women members of parliament, most of whom were reformists, and they were successful in bringing about some reforms in terms of the status of women. But you are quite right, there has been something of a setback with the latest election, and we now have there is a more conservative government in power in terms of the presidency and in terms of the parliament. But what we need to bear in mind is that there are various centers of power in Iran and that the Ahmadinejad does not make the foreign policy. It is the spiritual leader who makes the foreign policy and much of the domestic policy. And he has been there all along. So what is interesting to note, in spite of the conservative agenda of many of the leaders, is that the young and women in Iran, especially women and especially the youth, are extremely oriented towards Western culture. They're totally enamored of Western culture, whether whether it's pop culture or more classical culture. And I really believe that the leaders are somewhat out of touch with this aspect of the youth. And even though there have been attempts to outlaw, for instance, access to foreign television and access to foreign radio, people have been able to get around that. And there are satellite dishes everywhere. They've been getting smaller and smaller so that they're easier to hide. Many foreign films are banned, but people buy videotapes or DVDs of these foreign films. the youth in Iran is greatly attuned to the use of the internet. So there continues to be a very strong influence. And it falls on fertile ground, on receptive ears, because the youth is somewhat fed up with the social restrictions that have existed ever since the 1979 revolution. And even though things have loosened up, they are still continuing to battle to further loosen them up. And as simple a thing as how you wear your headscarf can be a political statement. The more hair you show from under the headscarf, that becomes a political statement. The tighter your tunic is, that becomes a political statement. But women are not just stopping there. They are trying to reform many of the laws. They have succeeded in raising the marriageable age of women from the low of 9 to 13 now for women and 15 for boys. They have made great efforts to gain access for women to the ability to go abroad and study. They were successful in that. And they continue fighting. They are very deeply engaged in reinterpreting the Islamic law and pointing out that many of the laws that are now being impressed upon the population in a very conservative manner are very rigid, patriarchal, and male interpretations of the religious law. And the women are pointing out that these are not necessarily the correct interpretations. For instance, nowhere in the Quran is there any necessity indicated that women must cover their hair or cover their faces. These are all partly local customs, partly of interpretations of the Quran. Another aspect where they're trying to bring about modification, for instance, is in the question of polygamy. There are two verses in the Quran relating to the custom of polygamy. One permits up to 4 wives simultaneously. Another one says, if you cannot treat them all equally, do not marry more than one. And the women are pointing out these discrepancies that have been in the past tilted towards interpreting in the favor of men. But another thing that I will
I need to ask you to hurry up. That's fine, because I've only got a couple minutes left, and I did promise everyone that we would tell them where the upcoming show was. It is 11:58. It is time for us to just about leave, but I do want to tell you, you are listening to WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. You can always catch the show if you walked in late, www.cvillepodcast.com. Sarah, Charlottesville Center for Peace and Justice, you are having an upcoming event. Want to tell us about that?
Yes. We're having the third annual Arts for Peace Community Gala. And as been said already, the theme this year is building cultural bridges to, in quotes, the axis of evil. And then it says, take the old Silk Road to experience the tastes and sounds of Iran, Iraq, and North Korea. We're having a buffet dinner that evening. We'll be featuring authentic dishes and desserts from Iran, Iraq, and Korea. It will be self-serve, and you can eat as much as you would like. During dinner, we'll also be having Arabic music performed on piano by Amjad Tufaha, traditional Persian dance performed by, I'm hoping I'm saying this correctly, excuse me if I'm not, Horia Mabubi, and classical Iranian music performed during dinner also by Puya Jahanshahi on sitar, Armin Tsirjerdi, on Tambak, Daf, and Amir Kupai unsanct tour. We also have a huge silent auction. Over 120 items of goods and services will be available. We have arts and crafts vendors selling their non-corporate gifts, and they'll be dancing from 9 p.m. on to the Corey Harris Band with the 5x5 and Daryl Rose. We'll have locally produced beer and wine available, and it'll be a wonderful evening. It's the only benefit, the only fundraiser that the Charlottesville Center for Peace and Justice has. It's our major source of funds for activities throughout the year. We hope that you will come out, support us, support peace, and have a wonderful evening. Learn about more about Iran, Iraq, and Korea. The music, the food, break bread with us, share peace. Thank you.
All right. I want to thank everyone for coming today. Sarah, thank you so much. Nesta, thank you. Professor Ramazani, thank you as well. I know that there's lots of questions that we could still have, but it's time to turn the station over to some music, and we'll just have everybody back in for another show, because there's obviously hours of things we can do left. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next week, we're going to have a show about Darfur, so be here for that.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news, on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasolines, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or at wnrn.rlc.net. The wake-up call is produced by Catherine Greiner. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the wake-up call, only on WNRN.